Good evening, and welcome to live coverage of the 2019 Kansas State of the State Address from Kansas Public Radio and the Kansas News Service. I'm Jay Schaefer at KPR in Lawrence. Kansas News Service reporters Stephen Caranda and Celia Yopis Jepson are at the State House in Topeka as we await Governor Laura Kelly's first State of the State speech. Also coming up tonight, the Republican response. Stay with us.
Coverage of the 2019 Kansas State of the State Address is provided by Kansas Action for Children, a nonprofit working at the State House to improve the lives of Kansas children and their families. On the web at kac.org. Additional support is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Mr. Speaker, Madam President, Chief Justice, members of the Supreme Court, members of the legislature, honored guests, and my fellow Kansans. What a truly profound honor it is to stand before you tonight, to offer a vision for the state we all love. In the East Gallery, I'm joined by the man I often joke about as my long-suffering husband, Ted Doughty.
You're listening to the State of the State Address with Governor Laura Kelly.
Ted has truly been a pillar of support for me and for our daughters over 30 years, but especially these last 13 months. Our daughters, Kathleen and Molly, were here earlier this week. Every time I see them, I'm reminded of why Ted and I made Kansas our home over three decades ago. It was a very wise decision. The upbringing that we were able to give our daughters in this magnificent state helped mold them into two remarkable individuals. I am very proud of them and the strong, talented women they have become. My partner in this journey, Lieutenant Governor Lynn Rogers, sitting right here, is here with his wife, Chris, in the gallery. Okay. Kansans will be hard-pressed to find a more energetic, big-hearted, and dedicated Lieutenant Governor. Lynn will be a true asset to our state as he works to cultivate growth in our rural communities. I'm also thrilled to welcome members of my new cabinet. You know, from the beginning, I committed to building a strong, diverse, dynamic group to rebuild our state. You'll recognize both Democrats and Republicans, women and men, a mix of seasoned veterans and fresh faces, all with a love for Kansas and a strong desire to serve. And I thank them for their willingness to take on these new challenges. And to the Kansas legislature, welcome back. It is wonderful to see so many old friends and to get to know some of the new leaders we have. I know I'm in a new role, but I want to maintain my working relationship with all of you because we're all in this together. We've got to be pulling in the same direction. There is so much at stake, and I look forward to working with you. It's been quite a week. I'm not usually one for ceremonial fanfare, but I have to say I've treasured every minute from the day of service to the inauguration on the Capitol steps to this incredibly surreal moment. but I'm also ready to get to work. My message to you this evening is both constitutionally mandated and a time-honored tradition. Of course, the personalities and the dynamics change and shift over time, but the backdrop and the fundamental task at hand never change. I am here as your governor for the year to offer a blueprint for the year ahead. You are here as lawmakers to enact a budget. This is something that has been done 157 times before. And yet something feels different tonight. You know, after a decade of crises, starting with the Great Recession and followed by a self-inflicted budget catastrophe, we found ourselves at a turning point. We were at times weary, frustrated, and sadly, untrusting of one another. But in the end, it came down to a fundamental question. We had to ask, what is Kansas worth? This was not just a matter of dollars and cents. It forced us to re-examine some of our most deeply held convictions, and it was a painful process. But as problems piled up, we had to accept reality. In 2017, we defied the odds, acknowledged the mistake, and hit reset in an historic act of bipartisanship. That is what it means to be a Kansan. Regardless of our state's partisan breakdown, our crowning achievements have always been won on middle ground. Now tonight, we'll start a new chapter. We must unite around the values we share. We must always remember the people who sent us here. They expect compromise and results. But we also must strike a delicate balance in the days ahead. It will require an acknowledgement of the entire Kansas story, not just one fiscal year or one moment in time. It is with this renewed sense of purpose and appreciation for our past struggles and an optimism for the next chapter that I proudly report that the state of our state is improving. ...2019 offers an unmatched opportunity for Kansas to continue its upward climb. But for our fragile recovery to continue, we must resist running to our partisan corners. We must keep our eyes fixed on the task at hand and the job we were elected to do. And all of that begins at the heart of our communities, our public schools. Just a few weeks ago, a story in the newspaper caught my eye. It was about a young man named Braxton Morrell. Braxton will graduate from Ulysses High School and Harvard University. That's right, Harvard. This year, at the tender age of 16. He will graduate with a bachelor's degree in government and a minor in English, and all while he is still in high school right here in Kansas. He's got big plans after graduation, too. I think he's heading off to law school. Braxton is obviously a uniquely talented student, but he also reminds us what young people will accomplish when given the opportunity. Braxton is here tonight in the East Gallery with his family. I ask you to join me in recognizing this amazing young Kansan. You know, students like Braxton exemplify the transformative power of our public schools, a place where all Kansas children who strive can reach their potential and overcome any obstacles, no matter where they come from. But only if we, as elected leaders, hold up our end of the bargain. Unfortunately, throughout the decades, Kansas has made promises and then fallen into a troubling pattern. It begins with the promise from elected officials to fund our schools, and then the failure to follow through on that promise. That is going to change this year. We will end this cycle of litigation and meet the needs of our students and teachers once and for all. The days of doing the bare minimum to fund our schools are over. It stops now. Remember, just a few short years ago, schools closed early because they literally couldn't afford to stay open. Test scores dropped for the first time in a decade, and class sizes grew, often with more than 30 kids in a single classroom. Superintendents and principals struggled to hold their districts together, often taking on multiple roles, that of counselor and bus driver. Sometimes they even refused to be paid, just to keep their budgets above water. Teachers fled the state, and those who stayed received an average salary that ranked 42nd in the country. The consequences were tangible, and the scars are lasting. Never again. We're going to properly fund our schools this year and next year and the year after that, every year, every month, every day that I'm governor. And we're going to make sure our schools prepare our children for a changing economy. Modern classrooms with modern technology. Because at the end of the day, we need our children to graduate high school or college or technical school so that they can find jobs right here in Kansas and they can stay here and raise their families close to home. When I began work on the state's budget last month, this was the very first decision I made. You know, budgets reflect our priorities, and my number one priority will always be our public schools. Now I'm calling. Now I'm calling on lawmakers to act on my proposal with equal urgency. To assist in the effort, I've separated education funding from the rest of the budget. This will provide a vehicle for you to consider the matter cleanly and quickly. My friends, we have debated this issue in these halls, in the courts of law, and in the court of public opinion. Kansans flocked to the polls in record numbers this past year to send a message about this issue specifically. Now we must listen to our families, our teachers, and our business leaders. We have a deadline to meet, so let's get this done. If we act decisively, we can all share in a bipartisan victory. Because I assure you, we face plenty of other urgent problems, specifically in our rural communities. This past July, I put forth a detailed plan to address the challenges facing rural Kansas. The majority of our 105 counties have lost population last year and for many years prior to that. And whether it's roads, broadband, housing, or agriculture, they need our support. Speaker Reichman and Representative Heineman, thank you for recognizing this important challenge and is creating a new committee to focus significant time and energy on this issue. And we look forward to partnering with you and the other committee members in moving this issue forward. Lieutenant Governor. Lieutenant Governor Lynn Rogers, along with our new Secretary of Commerce, David Tolan, will head up this effort on behalf of my administration. In the coming days, we will build an interconnected strategic plan for rural economic development that leverages our community's unique assets, that means developing infrastructure, addressing the shortage of affordable housing, and supporting agribusiness. We're going to cherish our rural and small town way of life, and we're going to make sure that the rural Kansans can get the support they need to thrive. And there's one more way we can do that, by expanding Medicaid. You know, just 2 weeks ago on December 31st, Mercy Hospital in Fort Scott closed its doors after more than 100 years in that community. This followed the closure of the hospital in Independence in 2015. You know, now the folks of Bourbon County will have to travel long distances for emergency care, to give birth, or just to get tests done. According to some reports, 30% of our state's hospitals are considered financially vulnerable. In small communities across the state, these facilities are at serious risk of closure. Rural communities cannot survive without hospitals and affordable health care, period. Young families, seniors, Kansans with chronic issues, or those who just want to stay healthy, no one can afford to risk their safety and well-being by living in a community without access to health care. Just by expanding CanCare, the state's Medicaid program, we can help these facilities stay open and provide health care to another 150,000 Kansans, no matter where they live. I've made no secret that expanding this program is one of my top priorities, and 77% of Kansans agree with me. You know, to date, our failure to act has cost Kansas over $3 billion in federal funding. That's $3 billion in our taxpayer dollars we've sent to the federal government that's gone to benefit other states. It's $3 billion that could have helped save Kansas lives, Kansas hospitals, and Kansas communities. Instead, we send it to states like Iowa, Colorado, Indiana, in Arkansas, or one of the 33 other states that have already expanded Medicaid. Child advocates support Medicaid expansion as a means of keeping vulnerable parents healthy. if low-income moms and dads can afford treatment for mental health or substance abuse or just everyday preventive care, they can take better care of their children, and perhaps we can keep these kids in their own homes and out of our foster care system. Senator Jerry Moran recently noted that rural hospitals are, and I quote, hanging on by a thread. And he agreed that expanding Medicaid could help them. And just last fall, Governor Jeff Collier's task force to address substance abuse disorders and the opioid crisis also recommended expansion to ease the unsustainable burden on our hospitals and our criminal justice system. We've seen Republican and Democratic-led states across the country find consensus on this issue to benefit their citizens, their communities, and their economies. For all these reasons and so many more, tomorrow's budget will pave the way for Medicaid expansion. Next week, I will announce a bipartisan working group to finalize a path forward. By Kansas Day, there will be a plan to expand Medicaid put before the Kansas legislature. I can imagine no better way to celebrate our state's 158th birthday than by embracing policy that will make every Kansas community healthier, stronger, and more secure. Please join me in this effort. And finally, another critical challenge we must address immediately, a moral crisis in Kansas that troubles me every day, and sadly, it's actually a matter of life and death. Our foster care system is at a crisis point. It requires immediate and considerable attention. This is an issue I've been working on since I graduated high school. I worked with troubled teens and children struggling with mental illness. It has been a lifelong mission to help our most vulnerable and often forgotten children. In the last few years, nothing has made me more angry than the callous disregard some agency leaders demonstrated towards our most vulnerable children and their families. The incompetence and lack of transparency we witnessed in committee hearings 18 months ago made national news, and it put a spotlight on this reprehensible crisis. Last year, when I found out 70 foster children were missing, I was beside myself. Not only that, the secretary at the time didn't seem bothered by the revelation, but I demanded answers, and together with colleagues and advocates, we demanded change. In the last year, the Child Welfare Task Force has done great work studying the problems and working towards accountability. But there was only so much we could do without full cooperation and transparency. The number of children in foster care in Kansas has skyrocketed. It's up 45% since 2011. We've seen the programs charged with helping families overwhelmed by sheer numbers in need, and the caseloads of dedicated social workers are absurdly high. making it challenging to provide the services needed by our most vulnerable children and their families. There is not an easy answer, but we must do more to protect our children. This is an emergency. These are our children in our communities facing abuse, neglect, and worse. Let's remember Evan Brewer, Jayla Haig, Makai Boone, and many more children who needed our help. These were our children in our communities, and I refuse to forget them. We must fix this now. My budget provides for funding for the Families First Prevention Services Act, a landmark piece of legislation approved by Congress last year. It will inject millions into efforts that strengthen vulnerable families and prevent children from entering the foster care system. My budget includes funding to hire more qualified social workers and reduce their caseloads. We will restore funding cuts to our prized Children's Initiative Fund, where we know our investments have the greatest impact on our youngest children. We will prioritize SCHIP, the State Children's Health Insurance Program, to accommodate federal changes so that low-income Kansas children don't lose their access to health care. Finally, working in partnership with my new Department of Children and Families Secretary, Laura Howard, we will rebuild the agency decimated by ideology and mismanagement. In November of last year, I said that in order to fix something, you have to know what's going on. You have to be able to get under the hood and see what is working and what is not. My team is already at work, and we will be transparent about what we find, and we will make it right. I know that each of you is committed to protecting all God's children, and that begins with our most needy. And I ask you to join with me in this fight. Tonight, I've laid out a few of our priorities for Kansas. We must restore funding to Kansas schools and end the cycle of litigation. We must expand Medicaid so we can create jobs, keep our tax dollars in Kansas, save our rural communities, and protect our most fragile families. We must fix our broken foster care system and do absolutely everything in our power to ensure that our most vulnerable children are protected from neglect and violence. Yet there are so many other things that we haven't discussed. Our crumbling roads and bridges, public safety, higher education, mental health, meeting the demands of our rapidly changing economy. I could go on and on. And I know you're sitting there worried that I will. Another time. Tomorrow morning, my budget director and your former colleague, Larry Campbell, will walk you through the details of my first state budget recommendation, delivered 3 weeks ahead of statutory deadline. I never did that with homework in school, I gotta tell you. Later this week, I will convene my first official cabinet meeting, during which time I will instruct each member to complete a thorough audit of her or his agency so we can increase effectiveness and efficiency, and we can eliminate waste and improve transparency by ending no-bid contracts. But we have just one more thing to cover tonight, and it actually brings us back to where we started. Those breathtaking years of crisis have left Kansas on the brink of collapse. Kansas lost more revenue in the first year of the Brownback tax plan than we lost in the entire Great Recession. And while the time for finger pointing is over, we're not off the hook for the long-term consequences of past policy decisions. I'm proud to honor my promise to balance the budget without raising taxes. But if we're going to succeed, I need your help to protect both sides of the budget equation until our fiscal health stabilizes. As many of you have already said, we must show restraint because ultimately we do not know what lies ahead. Kansas has endured two historic national recessions in the last 20 years. Another recession will soon be upon us. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when and how bad. Unlike the last two record-setting downturns, Kansas finds itself now completely unprepared. We have no margin for error. That's why we must be cautious, we must be conservative, and we must be fiscally responsible. We must live within our means, prioritize what matters, always look for ways to save, and always make sure our children come first. And we must work together to write this new chapter in Kansas. You know, throughout my time in the Senate, I've worked with all of you. As governor, that will continue. My door will be open, and I will listen. But I was elected to rebuild this state, and I take that responsibility very seriously. Kansans want us to work together. They want us to work together to make our state better, to provide more opportunities for our children, to grow our economy, and to make it possible for our rural communities to thrive. As your governor, I plan to do just that. That means cooperation, compromise, and bipartisanship. No one person, not even the governor, can act alone to achieve consensus. That's the whole point, working together. And in that spirit, I promise you this, I will do everything in my power to set the right tone. I will listen every day to leaders from both parties and to the people of the state. We'll take the best ideas, no matter where they come from, and we'll work together. It won't be easy. We all know we have a very long, challenging road ahead of us. These past 8 years have been a hardship, no doubt about it. But we're united by a common sense of values, that spirit of neighbor helping neighbor, and respect for one another, and always doing right by our children. Those are the values that brought my family here more than 3 decades ago, and they are the values that will guide me as your governor. Kansans are no stranger to hardship or hard work. We don't want things handed to us. We don't expect life to be easy. That raw grit, though, our fierce determination, is part of our history, and it's what makes us who we are. And if we work together, if we put partisanship aside and Kansas families first, then we can truly live up to our motto, ad aspera per aspera. And the story we write together will be one of cooperation and prosperity. God bless you, all of you, and God bless the great state of Kansas. Now let's get to work.
That's Kansas Governor Laura Kelly delivering her first State of the State speech from the House chamber in Topeka. You're listening to live coverage of the 2019 Kansas State of the State speech.
Coverage of the 2019 Kansas State of the State Address is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by Kansas Action for Children, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to shaping health, education, and economic policy that improves the lives of Kansas children and their families. On the web at kac.org.
Good evening. I'm Jay Schaefer, and this is continuing coverage of the State of the State speech from Kansas Public Radio and the Kansas News Service. Governor Laura Kelly spoke sooner and longer than we thought she would, but she is the governor, and this is her speech, so that is her prerogative. Stephen Caranda and Celia Yopis Jepson of the Kansas News Service have been standing by and listening along at the State House. In a few minutes, we'll hear a response to the governor's speech tonight from Republican Senate President Susan Weigel. But first, let's get some quick thoughts. Governor Kelly pointed out right off the bat that the address was constitutionally mandated, a time-honored tradition, she called it, but she diverted a little bit from tradition, didn't she, Stephen Caranda?
Yeah, we traditionally hear governors say something along the lines of the state of the state is strong. But Kelly did not say that. Early in the speech, we heard her say that the state of the state is improving. And she was really referencing the budget crisis the state faced after the 2012 tax cuts. She called it a self-inflicted budget catastrophe. But she said lawmakers had hit the reset button and rolled many of those tax cuts back in 2017.
State revenues have rebounded since the reversal of the Brownback tax cuts. And Celia, Governor Kelly pointed to what she wants to spend money on first.
Yeah, exactly. And this did not come as a surprise. The first thing on her list is money for schools. She says that she's going to make it a priority to end the long-running school finance lawsuit that the state has been facing. So that involves putting maybe $100 million more into schools. And so then also on her list, we have Medicaid expansion. And really, she kind of, the way she's described this is not the first time we've heard this tonight, is kind of triaging the things that she sees as most, most urgent. And those are schools, Medicaid expansion. That's something that she wants to extend coverage to another 150,000 Kansans this year. And the other thing that she talked about was child welfare. So she describes the foster care system as absolutely in crisis and really a matter of life or death.
You know, we were not expecting a lot of specifics in the speech, but we did get some. For example, on Medicaid, you mentioned Celia. She talked a lot about expanding Medicaid, and she pointed out that she's going to appoint a bipartisan panel to develop a Medicaid plan and release it by Kansas Day, which I had to look it up and refresh my memory, is later this month. So we should have a Medicaid expansion proposal by later this month.
It's less than 2 weeks.
Yeah.
From today.
Yeah.
That's much quicker than I was expecting. I thought we would see her Medicaid expansion plan later in the session, but it sounds like that's not the case. We'll see it soon.
Well, if you missed the speech, the three main points or the three main takeaways, and what I think will be the headline tomorrow in many newspapers is Governor Kelly says, fund schools, expand Medicaid, and fix foster care. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's exactly right.
Those are three things she talked about before, and she hit them hard tonight.
All right. Well, up next, the Republican response to tonight's State of the State Address. So stay with us.
Coverage of the 2019 Kansas State of the State Address is provided by Kansas Action for Children, a nonprofit working at the State House to improve the lives of Kansas children and their families. On the web at kac.org. Additional support is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Now we'll hear what the GOP has to say. Tonight's response is delivered by the President of the Kansas Senate, Republican Susan Weigel of Wichita.
My fellow Kansans, we are a humble, hardworking, and responsible people. We don't spend money we don't have on expenditures we can't afford, and we expect the same of our government. While we've had some difficult years, I can happily say we have come through the worst of it. As 2019 begins, revenues have rebounded, and we have a small surplus. Unfortunately, Governor Kelly's first budget would squander our fiscal recovery with a massive spending increase that would deepen our debt and require another major tax hike. Governor Kelly has proposed expanding Medicaid under a broken Obamacare system, while many Kansans are already suffering from skyrocketing premiums in the individual marketplace. In fact, insurance premiums have increased by over 200% since Obamacare was implemented. At the same time, she would have us surrender to the edicts of an unelected Supreme Court, spending even more than the billion-dollar increase already approved for public education through the year 2023. Candidate Kelly promised no new taxes. Governor Kelly has promised a budget that would absolutely require them. The Republican majority in the Kansas Senate stands ready to work with our former Senate colleague, but not at the expense of Kansas families. Kansas workers can't demand a raise from their boss to cover new spending, nor should state government in the form of higher taxes. We are just now digging out of the hole of the past decade. It's time to put down the shovel and not deepen the hole. As president of the Senate, I will work with the Senate to pay off our debts to CAPERS and spend responsibly without raising taxes. In fact, we will pass a bill that allows Kansans to take full advantage of the Trump tax cut. Governor Kelly has vowed to fight the decoupling of federal and state tax deductions, but we are not backing down. We believe Kansans should be able to deduct interest on their mortgages, property taxes, and health care expenses. The windfall from the Trump tax cuts belongs to Kansas taxpayers, not government. We want to limit government in order to create unlimited opportunity. That means passing a stable, responsible budget that invests wisely in schools. While we have already committed more money for education, we need to now focus on achieving improved student outcomes. We need to raise standards and achievement in our schools, reward excellent teachers, and emulate models of teaching success. We need to transform schools so every high school graduate is career or college ready. Students on an alternative track to a four-year college should have every chance to succeed. That's why we are going to continue to support job training and protect our investments in technical and trade schools. I congratulate Governor Kelly on her election as governor. While she earned the opportunity to lead this state, Kansas voters also sent a more conservative legislature to Topeka in 2019. As written in the preamble of our state constitution, we, the people of Kansas, are grateful to a mighty God for our civil and religious privileges. We will continue to stand for conservative Kansas values, such as life, liberty, and fiscal responsibility. We will defend Second Amendment rights because every law-abiding citizen has a right to defend themselves and their families. We will fight for greater choice and competition in the health insurance marketplace. 98,000 Kansas families have suffered from skyrocketing premiums under Obamacare. They deserve more affordable options, and we will work with the Trump administration to offer them. We believe the best long-term source of revenue for government is job creation, not higher taxation. Now is not the time to spend money we don't have on programs we can't afford. We've tried that, and it hasn't worked. Now is the time to unleash job creation and spread opportunity far and wide, to bring economic revitalization to the hustle and bustle of our inner cities and to the rolling plains of our most rural counties. I have 15 grandchildren. They are my pride and joy. I want a brighter future for them and for every child in Kansas. A brighter future requires wise fiscal stewardship. For their sake, we will pass a responsible budget, pay off our debts, and invest in education. For Kansans working in today's economy, we will pass on the full benefit of the Trump tax cut so they can have more money in their pocket to save for the future. These are the priorities of Senate Republicans, because they are the priorities of the people of Kansas. We hope the governor joins us in pursuing the path to prosperity that invests more in our people, not bigger government. Thank you, and may God continue to bless the great state of Kansas.
That's Senate President Susan Weigel responding to what Governor Laura Kelly laid out in her State of the State speech this evening. I'm Jay Schaefer with Kansas Public Radio over at the State House, listening along from the Kansas News Service, reporters Celia Yopis-Jepson and Stephen Caranda. Earlier tonight, Laura Kelly spoke repeatedly about the need for bipartisanship and common ground. Stephen, do you think the Republicans are ready to play along?
Well, I've heard from Republican leadership that they are willing to work with Governor Kelly, but they don't agree with her on everything. And Senate President Weigel there just reminded us that while we do have a newly elected Democratic governor, we also have a more conservative Republican legislature. Conservatives still have a strong voice in the legislature, the single strongest voice. And Senate President Weigel was also critical of some of Kelly's proposals. We heard her especially bashing Medicaid expansion, arguing that what the governor is proposing just won't work financially.
Yeah, and she really kind of made it there sound like, you know, expanding Medicaid eligibility would be kind of like jumping on a burning bandwagon. You know, Obamacare is going down. And that's an argument that we've heard before. I mean, we're kind of hearing two sides staking out the same positions that we've heard in the past. And then she went on to talk about, you know, the public schools. This is also a position we've heard in the past, that that we shouldn't as a state surrender to the unelected judges of the state Supreme Court on school funding.
We also heard a lot about this Trump tax cut. This is an issue that came up at the end of last session, where the federal tax changes kind of triggered some tax changes here in Kansas that, for example, made it so some people could no longer itemize on their taxes. A lot of Republicans want to get back into that issue and make sure that people have the ability again to itemize and maybe make some other tax changes. So they're already, Senate President Wagle was already setting up that as probably a pretty big issue of contention this session.
So, Celia, does this mean that the democratically controlled governor's office and the GOP-controlled legislature are already at loggerheads?
I mean, you know, for all the talk about bipartisanship, yeah, it's clear that there are going to be points where they're disagreeing. And Governor Kelly is very firm about what she wants. She is not at all interested in compromising on, you know, on this issue of complying with the court on school funding. And, you know, we're looking at increasing the funding, not just this year, but over the next 5 years to keep with the court, keep up with what the court has asked for.
And here's what the governor had to say.
2019 offers an unmatched opportunity for Kansas to continue its upward climb. But for our fragile recovery to continue, we must resist running to our partisan corners. We must keep our eyes fixed on the task at hand and the job we were elected to do.
That's what Laura Kelly had to say about bipartisanship. Here's what she had to say about school funding.
We will end this cycle of litigation and meet the needs of our students and teachers once and for all. The days of doing the bare minimum to fund our schools are over. It stops now.
Yeah, and she went on to say, you know, we will fund schools, you know, adequately this year and the next year and the year after that, you know, as long as I'm governor.
The governor wants to get that done and out of the way quickly. In fact, she has separated education funding from the rest of the budget. Stephen Caranda, how are we to look at that approach? Can she do that, separate the two, and what does that mean?
Well, I think apparently she thinks she can do it, or I doubt she would have said it in the State of the State address. But it's an interesting strategy. Education being the single largest item in the budget, lawmakers typically kind of think about it separately from other spending items. So this isn't a huge, you know, step out of the ordinary. But what is interesting is she said that she's doing that so that lawmakers can address that and hopefully do it quickly. Her plan is to try to get the education issue hammered out right away and sent back to the Supreme Court so the justices can make a ruling, hopefully sooner rather than later.
All right. Well, she did say she wants to protect both sides of the budget equation until our fiscal health stabilizes. But one big fight between the governor and the Republicans has to do with this tax windfall that some of us have read about. Can you define that for us, Stephen Caranda?
Yeah, that's what we were just talking about a few minutes ago. When the federal tax changes come into play with Kansas tax laws, it effectively changes on the federal level, triggered changes on the state level that ultimately cost some taxpayers more money because they couldn't itemize anymore. Lawmakers got in a big fight about that last year, ultimately didn't do anything because of questions about it, but that's coming right back up this year. So as you mentioned, we heard Senate President Wagle talk about it a lot in her response, and Governor Kelly just kind of hinted at it by saying we need to really look at both sides of the budget equation. And what she's saying there is, hey guys, don't do any tax cuts right now. Let's let everything settle, see how our finances are turning up before we look at cutting taxes.
I think perhaps the biggest cheer for Governor Kelly tonight, and she did have some cheering, came when she said she would expand Medicaid.
Yeah, I was sitting here thinking, oh, they're hooting and hollering for that one. They're not just cheering.
Celia, how do you see it? Will she be able to make any progress on this idea of Medicaid expansion when she's dealing with such a conservative legislature, both in the House and in the Senate?
Well, you know, she's going to make the argument that it's bipartisan, as you heard, and you know, she's going to be able to base that argument not only on the fact that there are states that are, you know, Democratic or Republican led that have done it, but also that here in Kansas, the legislature voted to expand Medicaid and that involved Republicans and Democrats.
By a big margin. They just didn't have enough to override a veto last 2 years ago.
Yeah, just barely. But you know, part of the argument she's going to push is what we heard tonight, that it's not just about whether these 150,000 people, you know, that whether they can go to the doctor. It's about the health of rural communities. And even she expressed it here as another way to potentially keep children out of that foster care system that she says, you know, and that everyone basically agrees is in crisis.
She did mm-hmm. say the foster care system is in crisis. Let's hear a little bit of what she had to say. Or perhaps not. Perhaps we'll just summarize what she had to say. She said this is an emergency.
Yes, that is not a surprise to hear her say. The agency has been troubled. We've known that. There have been a lot of revelations about the problem, kids sleeping in offices, the deaths. She named several children who had died in the state's child welfare system. So we know about the problems. The question is how to tackle them now. Previous Governor Collier had a new secretary for DCF to tackle some of the problems. Now Governor Kelly's going into it saying we need more money and we need a full top-to-bottom review of the agency. She argues they're going to be transparent about what they find as a way to try to tackle it.
All right, what's the headline in the newspaper tomorrow? Let's start with you first, Stephen.
Oh, I would say what we said earlier. Governor lays out priorities for Medicaid, education, and DCF funding.
That's not a very flashy headline. Celia, what?
It's a bad one. It's a bad headline. That was my first sentence.
Celia, okay, what maybe. Do you have?
Well, you know, I think she pointed out the argument she is making is that even though she said the state is improving, she's also kind of saying, like, it's in worse shape than even I thought. Like, you know, now that I've gotten in there and I've taken a look, we're worse off than I expected. And so you might be seeing a lot about that.
Let me have a mulligan here. I will say Governor Kelly points to targeted investments in state government because she didn't go broad. She specifically said, we're not going to be investing in everything. There are other things she didn't talk about.
Right. A lot of things.
There's plenty she didn't get to, but there's a whole session that lies ahead of us here in 2019. Celia, Stephen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That is all the time we have tonight. My thanks to Stephen Caranda and Celia Yopis Jepson with the Kansas News Service, and thanks to editor Amy Jeffries. They've been hanging around behind the scenes at the Statehouse tonight. Thanks also to our engineer, Steve Kincaid, and producer Laura Lorson here at Kansas Public Radio in Lawrence. For all of us who work in public broadcasting, this is Jay Schaefer saying good night. Thanks for listening.